When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now that was something special. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Crash MotoGP podcast. I'm your host Jordan Morland. I'm joined by Pete McLaren and Rob Jones. We are here to talk about the most incredible weekend at Jerez. I can remember for a very long time in MotoGP, what a weekend we had. Marc Marquez fighting at the front, Pecco Bagnaia showing his true grit, and we haven't even talked about the sprint race yet, but we'll focus on the Grand Prix. Pete, what are your thoughts on that weekend? Just as a starter, it was just incredible, wasn't it?
Cracking weekend, wasn't it? Yeah, all round. It had shocks, surprises, battles, everything. I think if Liberty were watching, they would have thought they got good value for money from this deal. But yeah, I mean, and just looking specifically at Pecco, probably his best race, right? I agree. All things considered, coming into the race, having had the crash in the sprint, okay, not really his fault, but still knowing he couldn't afford to lose even more points. We were speaking earlier, fantastic outbreaking move at the start of the race, puts it in contention, puts the pressure on Martin. Martin makes a mistake. Then he has the battle with Mark and he comes out on top. I mean, yeah, you know, fantastic from Pecco. Just what he needed, puts him back in the battle. And yeah, you know, and for Mark as well. I mean, he keeps saying step by step, doesn't he? He wanted the podium, didn't he? That's what he keeps saying. Everyone's saying, oh, come on, you want the win, don't you? But first, I need the podium. Well, yeah. He got the podium, didn't he? Okay, he had the setback in the sprint, and as he said, he couldn't afford to fall again in the Grand Prix. And I think he was a little bit tentative in some of those battles with Pecco when you compare it to the battles he was doing in the sprint on Saturday. Anyway, he knew he couldn't afford to fall down again. He didn't. He took the fight to Pecco as well. And yeah, he's come away. There's only one place he can go from now, isn't it? And that's the top step of the podium. So he's got the podium he wanted. He's got to look at race wins from now on.
Spot on, Pete. Yeah. Rob, what were your thoughts on that weekend? It was truly special, wasn't it?
Yeah, just an incredible weekend of racing. I mean, COTA sort of surpassed anything we've seen in a long time, just in terms of the competitiveness from a lot of riders and a lot of different manufacturers. But I think in its own way, to have a battle like we did, I mean, there was a battle already brewing in the sprint with Mark and Martin, but then obviously to have the Grand Prix and that sort of race where you could feel it was building to a crescendo, and obviously Marquez had the pace once he got past Lobastini, Bezzecchi, and then yep. Bagnaia was sort of trying to hold on, but at the same time he spoke about it after the race, had a plan of how to try and deal with Marquez's attack, and to do that when they're pushing at the speeds that they were was incredible. It was just a fantastic advert for MotoGP once again.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, well, we'll get straight into that battle. You know, Pete touched on at the start, Pecco made a fantastic move on lap one. He outbraked, you know, he went around the outside and at the end of the back straight into the Danny Pedrosa corner, and just the sheer braking power. When you watch the helicopter, I advise everyone to do it. You just see how much he outbrakes everybody, but he just kind of slots in. Like, it's just one of the best overtakes I can remember for a very long time. But the race was a weird race at the start. Marc Marquez, he said that, you know, he kind of felt a bit stiff when he was leading, and then he got overtaken by Martin. Bagnaia came through, and then Bezzecchi came through. But I suppose we have to start, really the main talking point would be Jorge Martin crashing out. Pete, you know, he was going so well. You know, he won the sprint race. My prediction, thank you very much. even though it was a bit crazy, we'll come on to that. But he had looked so good, and I was thinking once he was out front, he was controlling the pace. But then pressure from Pecco, he loses the front at the Pedrosa corner. You know, a big DNF and a big swing in the championship, really, as well.
I suppose having not really given him enough credit for all of the good results he's had this year, we shouldn't jump on him too much for one mistake.
Yeah, true.
But undoubtedly, you know, it was a mistake. And I think the biggest issue really is that he doesn't seem to know why it happened. I know there's a lot of theories about maybe he's offline, maybe it was the pressure with Pecco, whatever. But for Martin himself, he's saying, well, I don't know why I crashed. And that's going to be a bit of a concern, isn't it? Because if you know exactly what you did wrong, you can obviously make sure you don't do it again. I think that's a bit of a concern for him that he needs to get to the bottom of this and put it behind him. But the first crack, wasn't it, really? Until then, everyone else had been making the mistakes, I think, other than Bastianini, who's been doing a decent job. But, you know, Martin's been winning. As you say, he won on the Saturday again.
Yeah.
Got the maximum points again. Built his championship lead, 29 points or something, which is pretty decent at this stage. And then down he goes and sort of combined with Pecco having this comeback. And now Pecco's in the second of the championship, isn't he? He's right back up there. It just shows how quickly things can change in the space of one race.
Exactly. You know, at one point, actually, they put a graphic on the screen during that when he was leading and Pecco was in second. It was actually a 47-point lead still. So, you know, it's nearly two Grand Prix essentially nearly had over Bagnaia, and it's down to 17. So it's nothing now, really. You know, when you add in the sprint points and everything, it changed the dynamic of the race. And, Rob, it changed the dynamic of the race for Marc Marquez, I think, because, as you mentioned, he was behind Bezzecchi. And then when it got to that 12-lap, maybe that sprint distance that we seen that he was so strong in before he had crashed on Saturday, he seen the lap counter and he went, right, my time to go. And he just started eating into Pecco's leads, didn't he?
Yeah, he already demonstrated on Friday that he had really good pace the more the tyres were worn. So we were sort of, it wasn't a surprise that he got strong as the race went on. But I don't think we expected, once he was behind by the gap that he was, and obviously he was sort of a little bit being held up by Bezzecchi and couldn't get through, I think, because of the tyre pressures. But obviously, Bezzecchi made that mistake of about 12 laps ago, which allowed Marquez to not get through initially, but to just get onto the back of him and then line up a move. But then as soon as he did, and sort of he had that fresh air, you saw his pace, and it was really, really impressive. The way he was, because Bagnaia didn't make a mistake, really. Bagnaia was riding very, very quickly without any mistakes. But you could just see the gap being brought down. A couple of tenths here, a couple of tenths there. And I think it was just the performance, you know, to come back after the sprint, because that would have been devastating to have gotten into the lead. Pretty much had a surefire win waiting for him, because I know Martin stayed with him, but there wasn't really a challenge that looked like it was coming from Martin. And Martin even said he was happy to sort of take second place that day. But for Mark to come back and throw everything at it and just show once again that no matter what's gone on previously, if he's got the potential, he's going to at least try. So to catch Bagnaia, and obviously he had that section of the track, the two left-handers, where he was just making up so much time. And you knew already from the sprint that turn 9 was sort of going to be his attempt or the best hotspot to overtake. But his pace was incredible. And the battle that he delivered for us with Bagnaia was something special.
You know, he kind of had to maybe bide his time when he didn't get through at the start. And then once he started reeling in Pecco, as you said, Rob, through the 7, 8, 9, he was just incredible. And when he made that initial move with 5 laps to go, Pete, I mean, the crowd, the noise that you heard through the commentary as well, it was like someone had scored in a World Cup final. It was incredible. But Pecco was very smart. You know, he knew Marquez was going to be there, and he knew that he was quick through that section. So he did say after the race that, I'll just break as hard as I can, and if Mark runs wide, I'll be straight up underneath him. But when he went straight up underneath him, Mark continued to ride around the outside, and there was contact on the exit of turn 9 into 10. I mean, it was just incredible drama. I mean, how they didn't crash, we're grateful for it, essentially.
Certainly close, wasn't it? Yeah, that stadium section. It looks massive on TV, but it's actually quite small, which just increases the atmosphere of it, doesn't it? And so to have a home rider and Mark, of course, so famous in all over the world, but especially in Spain, to you know, take the lead and come back there at the track where, you know, his career almost ended, or, you know, a few years ago, if you like. it was just everything together, wasn't it, in that moment? And but as you said, Pekka wasn't playing by the script. He had a plan in mind of how to change this the outcome of this. And fantastic comeback by Pekka. I mean, in a way, he did. Did he learn from the Portimao incident? I don't know. In the Portimao incident, he didn't get far enough alongside, did he, so that when there was contact, they both went down. This time he made sure, look, if there's contact and if it's hard, you're not going down. So, you know, in a way, Pekka set the rules of engagement here now, hasn't he, as well? This is quite interesting. You know, he set the rules as it's okay to touch another Ducati rider with your front wheel as long as you both stay upright. So that's now the level, isn't it? When they next battle, and we've got to believe they will, we know that's the standard. The standard is that you can make contact with another Ducati rider as long as you don't take them down. We saw lots of tense faces in the Ducati garage, didn't we? because they could see. And I think a lot of us, when we saw Pecco make that contact with Mark, it was, here we go, Mark's going to give it back to him.
Yeah.
Because we'd seen in the sprint race and we know that's Mark's style. But he didn't. He held back. He didn't just run it into the last corner. Okay, he was too far behind on the last lap, but he was certainly close enough before then, wasn't he, to have made a lunge back. But he didn't. He kind of controlled himself. And, again, that's maybe thinking long-term, thinking about the future. And as he said this weekend, he wants a factory bike next year. And he kind of made clear he wants to be in the factory team, not just the factory bike. The last thing that you need if you do that is to take out the star of the factory team. So I think all boxes ticked by Mark in that respect. And, a great weekend all round. They're not on the same bike, of course. Mark is on the year-old bike. We have to say that. On the other hand, let's be honest here. The other GP23s were closer to Mark this weekend.
Bezzetti, they were,
you guys have mentioned. Also, Alex was fast as well. So, you know, we've got to be balanced and do both sides of it. Mark didn't have the advantage over the other guys on the 23 that he's had at other tracks. So that was the other side of it. But certainly for Mark now, big relief. And I think... you saw the celebrations, to come back to what you were saying, after the race, didn't you, with the fans? And that will, you know, that will fuel him for the upcoming rounds. That enjoyment that he gets from racing again, which is what he told us was the reason for going to Gresini and Ducati. Well, he's getting that now. Let's see where he goes from here.
Exactly. And just to touch on the results, so Pete said GP23 did perform very strong this week. So Pecco Bagnaia, GP24, Marquez, GP23. Marco Bezzecchi in third in the GP23, and then Alex Marquez in fourth on the GP23. So, and Andrea Bastianini as well in fifth. So a Ducati lock out of the top five, but three of the GP23s in there. So it's very good to see that while, yes, there's a year difference, that bike is still so competitive. And not to forget, one last year as well. Yeah, just incredible. The way that Marquez, like you say, Pecco kind of showed him, okay, if you can touch now. So as he put that away somewhere where he's like, I'll remember that. But I think that the thing I really like about Mark Marquez's attitude, I think some fans really miss the point of it. When there's contact, when someone makes contact with him, he will give them credit. He'll say, do you know what? It was fair. And that's, like I say, it's the way he races. But if someone done it, if Marquez done it the opposite, I think people get a reaction differently. So I think you understand that this is just the way he likes to race. And if someone does to him, he will be respectful. And there was great scenes after. I like the respect between Pecco and Mark, because after Portimao, I did think, it's going to get a bit frosty, but they kept it on track together and delivered a fantastic show yesterday. And I want this every weekend. Very greedy of me, but it's not going to happen every weekend because Haref, Rob, I want to talk about the circuit and how it's being perceived now. You know, I seen a lot of tweets yesterday saying that Monaco is F1 sort of diamond. You know, Indy 500 for IndyCar. Is Haref now MotoGP's centrepiece? You know, because it's so iconic, isn't it?
I think it's definitely up there. You know, for a lot of years, the riders themselves have always talked about Haref and Mugello as the sort of go-to circuits that, not just in terms of the layout, allow the riders to go fast and allow for great racing, but I think the spectacle as well, the atmosphere that the fans help bring in. It just makes it a bit of a cathedral and a big event. Like you said earlier, the reaction when Marquez went through was almost of that of a goal being scored in the World Cup final. It was, you know, it also has that stadium section, a bit like the Mexico circuit, which F1 go to.
Yep.
Which, again, just has the potential to allow for so much for the fans to just really get involved. And I think Jerez is that circuit which just blends all of that together. It's a fantastic layout. All the riders enjoy the circuit. it helps, I think, that they all know it so well from testing, and that probably helps make Jerez the sort of showpiece of MotoGP because it's such a fundamental circuit for their calendar. But I think, once again, to just see the racing that we got, whether it was the sprint, you know, and the crashes that took place because of the wet patches, again, something we don't normally get at Jerez is poor weather, but we got it this year, and look what it threw up on Saturday. But then also we've seen so many races where they've either been decided at that last corner or duels like we had yesterday with Pecco and Marquez. And I think Jerez is a great circuit on its own, but what it also does is it never disappoints. And I think that's the big takeaway from this year as well.
Yeah, and Pete, just to finally touch on just yesterday, the battle between those two. You know, Mark finishes second, okay? And, you know, 4 years ago, his career was nearly ended at this circuit. It kind of felt like there was kind of a demon just kind of banished yesterday when you seen him celebrating. He was on his knees in the gravel. He was bowing to the crowd and he was on the fence shaking it. And there's some incredible photos of him with like a red flare. And it looks like it's like an Italian like football match. It's like incredible with the fans. I got a sense yesterday and him dancing on the podium and stuff. It was just maybe everything that he's went through, you know, leaving Honda, being on a satellite Ducati, it's freed him up. And I think a lot of people are starting to see just the character that he really is. And he's starting to show that. You know, how important is that for MotoGP to have someone like Marc Márquez, who's been through so much, to finally have this redemption sort of story in the sport?
It's a bit like when Rossi went back to Yamaha, isn't it? You know, he had those two dark years at Ducati without the success. Everyone started saying, "Oh, maybe it's him, maybe he can't win again." He goes back to Yamaha and he ends up on top again. And it's... that whole story, that whole comeback story. And now Mark is only one step away from winning again, isn't he? So it looks a question of time before he does so. And so it is quite remarkable how you see these sort of things repeated again. And, you know, Mark would have questioned himself for sure. It seems unbelievable that someone as confident as Mark, who used to ride with so much confidence, if you know what I mean, would actually start to question his ability. But I mean, as he admitted, he did, you know, with all the injuries, all the accidents, everything else. Even the two race accidents coming into Sunday, it had started to knock his confidence. And the celebrations that you speak about, I think that's the other side of it, isn't it? That's the relief coming out when he realizes, yeah, I'm still here. I can still do this. And as you say, in terms of the impact on the sport, you only need to see the reaction of the fans. Okay, it's Spain. It's always going to be a special reaction for a home rider. But still, you know, Mark is now the biggest of the current riders on the grid. You know, his number of championships dwarfs everyone else's at the moment. So he is the star rider. So to have the star rider at the front, as I say, it's like having Rossi back at the front, as we saw previously. And, you know, although Rossi's, obviously his best years were earlier on, as probably they have been for Mark, we saw some great battles, didn't we, later on in Rossi's career when he took on the young guys. Now we're seeing Mark doing the same. We're seeing Mark taking the fight as the experienced guy in his 30s to the Pecco Bagnaias, the Jorge Martins and all these other guys. So I think there's a lot for MotoGP to look forward to.
Exactly. I want to touch on Pecco Bagnaia. I don't want him to get lost in this at all. I think I think it was his best race he's actually ever had in MotoGP, Rob. I think just to show, you know, he got knocked off in the sprint and I could see he was pissed off. You could tell after he was wanting a penalty for Binder. But then it comes to Sunday. He's qualified on the third row, makes a great start. That overtake we've talked about on lap one. Pressures, who knows, Martin into mistake because his presence was always there. He was so strong on the brakes. Beats Marc Márquez like he had done for his first Grand Prix win at Aragon in 2021. People don't even remember that as well. You know, he has had to fight Márquez on a Honda. He's fought him on a Ducati and he's came out on top. I think Pecco Bagnaia has shown a lot of people why he is a two-time world champion, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think what probably makes his win even more special is the start of the season that he's had. You know, he had the win in Qatar, and then it's sort of fallen apart since then. Obviously, the clash with Márquez in Portimao, but then Cota didn't go to plan at all. So I think knowing from his perspective, Bagnaia would have known that he needed a big weekend. So the pressure would have been on him. And then on top of that, to go out in the sprint the way he did, the pressure was mounting, not only to just secure a big result, but because Martin was being so consistent at the front of the championship. And then if you spin the narrative back the other way, it's a case of not only has Bagnaia won that duel with Márquez, ridden an incredible race, but he also in a way has forced Martin to crack for the first time. So I think if you put all of that together, It's an incredible performance and one that does just show why he's a two-time world champion in MotoGP and why, until it's mathematically impossible, you're always going to suspect that Bagnaia can make a late charge, because he's got those sort of performances in him where it's either through him being the fastest, or what he also, I think, does probably better than any other rider is the way he can absorb pressure. Because any other rider would have probably folded when Mark had come through the first time yesterday at turn nine. Yeah. But Bagnaia was smart and he knew, okay, this attack's going to come again, and then I'll put my best pace down, set an incredible lap. I mean, that 37.4, I think, with, two laps to go, it is the sort of pace that no one else could have imagined doing. So I think you put all that together and you see why Bagnaia is thought of so highly, why he's got the reputation that he's got. And I think that's the sort of performance that's going to now allow him to just sort of gain that confidence back, and going forward, he's going to be the Bagnaia that we know.
Yeah, no, you say that lap he done, it was a 37.4, and you could visibly see on the camera the gap that he had put between him and Mark. And Mark did not do a slow lap, he'd done a 37.7 or an 8 or a low 8, and it was a great lap as well. And it just broke Mark for that one lap where it made him go, okay, Pecco has really stretched this. And I think it kind of, there's a lot of respect there in that sense. Mark said after that, you know, wow, that shows how much he really wanted it. And I have to give so much credit to Pecco, because when champions get knocked down, you know, sometimes people write them off very quickly. And we've seen it actually a lot through Pecco in his MotoGP career. People say, what's he done? He's blown it. Throughout 2022, when he made that incredible comeback. Last year, when he went through some struggles where he would crash out of great positions, or he'd be taken out by, say, Maverick in Le Mans, where there was that incident. People always question his mentality. And we said, Pete, on previous podcast, he always bounces back. And I think now, outside of Mark and maybe a few others, he is an ultimate Sunday rider when it comes to a Grand Prix. Say if it didn't go his way in a sprint and he has something on the line, he is just incredible. And I have to tip my hat to him. I think it's just, a proper champion's performance. And I think it was his best win in MotoGP to date. So, 30th Grand Prix win as well in his career, 20th at MotoGP. So, Pecco is going up the numbers slowly. And I think people forget that, you know, he's got two world titles in MotoGP. He's got one in Moto2, 30 Grand Prix wins overall. It's creeping up them statistics boards. So, a fantastic weekend for him.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Now, I want to talk about race direction and a few things that happened. In the Grand Prix, there were three incidents yesterday. There was one with Pedro Acosta and Johann Zarco on lap one. That was no further action. There was Aleix Espargaró and Johann Zarco at the same corner where Aleix and Zarco both went down. No further action. Then the one that I think should have been a penalty but wasn't, the Frankie Morbidelli-Jack Miller incident where Frankie was up the inside, lost the front, wiped out Jack. Pete, race direction had a lot of stuff to deal with yesterday. And again, last year there was penalties for things that shouldn't have been penalties. But there should have been penalties yesterday, I think. And we didn't get any. So where do race directions stand? Are we just going to continue with this no further action? Or is it going to be a change again? Because the consistency is a real problem, I think.
It sort of started on the Saturday, didn't it? After the sprint race, there was a lot of riders unhappy with some of the moves that Mark had made. And he got a one place, demote one place,
drop,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was Mir, and I think also Oliveira felt that, hang on a minute, are we now swapping the long lap penalty for just demote one position? So there was a few people unhappy with that. Then there was some people unhappy with, obviously, Binder's move into turn one that ended up with Bagnaia on the ground. So that seems to have been more of the topic of the arguments, if you like. The Sunday incident, certainly it sounds like Zarco and Aleix were, they sort of settled it between themselves, if you like.
Exactly, yes.
Understood each other's point of view. But Zarco seems to have been angry then about previous decisions or something, that they don't know where the line is. With Jack, I don't know. Jack says, look, he didn't make contact. He says the visor just fell off his helmet, so it looked like he got closer than he did. I mean, you can understand people getting angry. I don't blame Jack for screaming and shouting. I mean, he's just been taken down in a fast corner. I mean, it's a scary thing. You jump out of a moving car, you're going to be a bit shaken up by it, aren't you? So he's disappointed, he's angry, and he lets off a bit of steam. But I don't think there was actually any physical contact between them. It's one of those things. Whether it should have been a penalty is a different matter again. As I say, in the end, quite a lot of people were surprised that there was no action taken for any of them. It seems like the only action would have been that the Acosta and Zarco one, which would have been a demote one position, but it's sort of Zarco ended up dropping back anyway, so they decided not to. And so the only guy that got penalties on Sunday was Augusto Fernandez, who lined up in the wrong place on the starting grid. I guess he had an issue with his hole shot device. He then didn't see the penalty thing, so then he got a ride through. So he ended up the worst off as far as the penalties. But penalties, another talking point at Jerez, just as they were a year ago.
I'll watch it back with Jack Miller. I don't think he's tried to run in and try to physically take him down. But like you say, seen it in Bracer about last year with Glenn Irwin and Tommy Brightwell as well. There was stuff where it gets very heated, of course, and I think Jack was really unlucky yesterday. I do think Frankie should have got a penalty because, you know, this is the sort of stuff that we've seen. And Pecco made a good point as well. Him and Mark collided in Portimao. They spent 1 hour in the race direction, essentially, trying to fight the case. But on Saturday, nothing between him and Binder and that Bezzecchi incident. And Bagnaia was adamant it was a penalty. This is what I don't understand. Are we starting to value penalties more in a Grand Prix, or is it different in a sprint? Rob, where do you stand on this? Because I do think, you know, the move that Binder put on Pecco, he was very much on the curb on the inside. And yes, it didn't help that Bezzecchi had ran wide slightly and Pecco was just sandwiched in the middle, essentially. And Brad didn't even know that Pecco had crashed as well. So where do you stand on how penalties are handed out?
I think, to start with, the inconsistency is a major, major problem. And it's not the first time speaking after the race, Zarco was very, very angry with Freddie Spencer.
Yeah.
The problem is, it's not the first time that riders have been upset with the way Spencer has either dealt with situations or, in some cases, not really dealt with them. And I think that's a big issue at the top of the line, that riders aren't getting clarity, because I think the fact that they're not getting clarity is they're not helping the racing in the sprint and the Grand Prix, because they don't know what is going to be a penalty and what isn't going to be a penalty. For me, personally, I think regardless of what race it is, penalties have to be handed out, or the racing, the incidents that take place, they have to be evaluated the same, because at the end of the day, it's a race. Yes, less points are given, and it might be a more chaotic race, but that should alter how a penalty or an incident is viewed. Because the riders are in control of how they're racing. So the incident with Binder, you know, he wouldn't have known where Bezzecchi was and if Bezzecchi had closed back in towards Bagnaia. But at the end of the day, Binder was very, very aggressive, went for a gap that kind of wasn't really there. And that would have been fair, in my opinion, to have given him a penalty, or to at least have had a proper sort of conversation about why he went for the move and what had happened and why he thought it was a good move because he didn't see Bezzecchi. That sort of conversation doesn't really seem like that happened. And I think that it's not going to help when riders are going for moves. If now riders are tentative going for overtakes because of, in their head, they're thinking, oh, if I make contact and it sends the rider down, or if it just moves him offline, what's going to come of that? If they don't know that, then the racing could also get taken down in terms of how exciting it is. So I think they've got to get on top of this. But fundamentally, the incidents have to be approached the same way, regardless of if it's sprint, Grand Prix, or circumstance, really.
I agree. I think it's the thing that I get really annoyed about is the sanction. It's like someone, like you say, gets one place demoted. What about long lap penalty then? Because we've seen it in the past. People have got long lap penalties for some incidents that were there yesterday and the day before. Were like, they would have got a long lap penalty. So this is the thing. Just make it consistent. Make sure the sanction is the same for everyone, because I know incidents are very subjective and they can change a lot, you know, when you look at them multiple times and you hear the opinions of riders, but they're not doing themselves any favours. And I don't want to be talking about penalties every single week. And the riders just seem to be just as confused as everyone else, because they're trying to work out, as you say, where the limit is and what is a penalty, what isn't. So yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, as you said, Zarco was very unhappy on French TV and to the press yesterday. He was not very complimentary about Freddie Spencer, put it that way. So another weekend of MotoGP where we have great track action, but then sometimes the negativity of just penalties and stuff just gets in the way. But yeah, we'll live to talk about it another day, I'm sure. So we'll see what happens. I want to talk about the sprint, because I said the peak before we started recording this, that we could have had a dedicated podcast to that race on itself. If you didn't see it, Jorge Martin won the race with Pedro Acosta in second and Danny Pedrosa third, but that wasn't the finishing result on the line. So, Pete, where do we even start with this? It's Jorge Martin won, Pedro Acosta finished second, Fabio Quartararo on the road finished third, but then got a penalty for tyre pressures, and Danny Pedrosa gets a podium. But the main part of that race was the, as we said, the Binder Bagnaia incident, and then we had the wet patches on the track that just caused absolute chaos. So they did, didn't they?
Exactly, yeah. There was, what, 15 accidents, I think. So if you take Bagnaia's out of it, the other 14 were basically because of the damp patches, I think. So just small patches of water that seemed to be seeping through. There'd obviously been rain in the morning. We had wet qualifying when Marquez was on pole. The track was fully dry, if you like, officially, for the sprint race by the afternoon. But the water was sort of just seeping up from underneath, and just little patches, 10, 20 centimetres long. But if you got a little bit offline or took a slightly different line, that was when you could normally be caught out.
Yeah.
It seems that riders, obviously, they had the sighting lap. They tried to have a look, but you're not always on the same, you know, if you're overtaking people, that kind of thing. You're not taking the same line every time. And a lot of people caught out by it. And then just when we think all the drama is over, and as you say, people like Quartararo have gone from, what, 23rd on the grid to third.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Five riders getting post-race tyre penalties, which now is 8 seconds. And that completely shifts the order. And that's, the main ones that were affected, obviously Quartararo and also Raul Fernandez. So that drops those guys down the order, and suddenly Pedrosa's on the podium, if you want to call it a podium. This is hours, obviously, after the ceremony has taken place. So the KTM guys, they go and get the podium, put it at the back of the trucks, and Quartararo comes and brings the medal, doesn't he? The third.
He signs the back of it. He said, "Enjoy, Danny," with a smiley face. Signed it. So we have
good of it. Yeah, exactly. Which shows a lot about Quartararo as a person.
It does, yeah.
So, and they bring a bottle of champagne and everything else, and they have a ceremony there. I don't know, 6-7 p.m. at night. So yeah, just and of course, Marc Marquez falling from the lead. So an awful lot went on in that race, and the sprints are always action packed, aren't they? But I think that's probably the most chaotic that we've seen so far.
It was just crazy. I couldn't, that lap 9 was just, honestly, I think I'll never forget that lap, because it was like, I said to Rob, the broadcast, you just seen, there was no Alex Marquez, and I was like, oh, Christ, but there's no Binder, there's no Bashney, and then they cut to the gravel track, and they're all looking confused at each other, like, what has happened, Rob? And then, as you said, the replay, we talked about it, the replay is showing that, and then it cuts back to the helicopter shot, and then it just shows Marc Marquez losing the front at turn 9. And then the lap after, Maverick Vinales, a great comeback, right? Essentially, yes, he's got lucky, he's in third, same corner, turn 5. He loses the front then, and you're thinking, what is going on here? And it was just, A lot of people split opinion, saying it should have been red flagged, but the riders majority, they said nothing really could have been done. They knew that these patches were here and it was just essentially trying to manage it. And yeah, how do you even sum up that sprint, Rob? It's just crazy.
Chaotic, wild, unprecedented. I don't know where you start. It was a crazy, crazy race. Obviously, I think to your point, I don't think it should have been red flagged. You know, it's a bit different if oil is on the track or is debris. Yeah. I think the fact that it being wet patches, it was just a case of essentially just trying to survive the tricky conditions, because for the main part, the circuit was very, very dry. So it's just a case of, I think, because these riders were pushing so hard, just being slightly offline, and we're talking centimeters, and you hit that damp patch and down you went. Like you said, that lap 9 where Alex Marquez had gone down, you sort of heard the commentary sort of say, oh, someone's gone down, and the yellow flag had come out immediately. But you're thinking it's just maybe one rider, then you've got all three riders just flying through the gravel trap and then standing up and hands out like, I don't really know what's happened. Then as they were showing the replays, you sort of heard the Spanish crowd gasping. And you knew the only person who was having that sort of reaction all weekend was Marc Marquez. So it's kind of like, you're thinking, what's happening? As they cut back to the helicopter shot, he's obviously just losing the front. First of all, fantastic work by the helicopter shots to get that.
Brilliant, yeah.
To have Bagnaia overtake yesterday. They got some really cool shots from that weekend, but just a crazy race. And then, like you said, with Vinales, the most surprising third position he could have been in. And then for half a lap, it's looking like his championship charge is on again.
Exactly.
After Cota. And then he goes down, sort of immediately gets up and is thinking, what the hell's happened there? So the downside is, are we going to see a sprint like that again? That's the only fear.
Probably not.
Because it was so dramatic. But, you know, even reporting on the race, I don't know what it was like for Pete. It was hard keeping up with what was going on. There was a lot of action. And you're thinking, what am I missing next? Instead of what am I going to see next, what am I missing? But just a fantastic race. You know, obviously you don't want to see riders crash, but just once again, the advert for MotoGP is you can't see this sort of racing anywhere else. How dramatic it is, how much these riders are pushing to the limit. And I think the sprint race, obviously the contact we don't want to see, that results in Bagnaia going down, and it's another big name losing championship points that we don't want to see. But it just... an unbelievable race, and hopefully we get more like it.
Yeah, well, if we get another sprint race like Jerez 2024, I think, I don't know where it's going to happen, but if you're out there somewhere in the future, my God, yeah, incredible. And just looking at the results, I have them in front of me. You know, Marc Marquez crashes out of the lead. He still finishes after the time penalties and stuff in sixth place. He gets 4 points. Just little things as well. Frankie Morbidelli gets a fourth place. Augusto Fernandez is in seventh. Miguel Oliveira is in eighth. Joao Mir gets a point after losing out in the points and then getting one eventually after the time penalty.
There was Jakob as well, I mean, at the final corner. He was going to get
sixth. I forgot about that.
He just crashed at the final corner, last lap. A lot of personal bests for a lot of riders this weekend in that race.
And just like you say, Fabio Quartararo, 23rd, Pete the 3rd, well, 5th in the end. But, I mean, just incredible when you think about what happened in that race. I think we're not going to get it every week. It was a one-off, but it just shows MotoGP is just so unpredictable in the sprint races. I'd say delivered, but, you know, it was just, I didn't know what to look at, where to watch. I was just kind of so zoned in on it that I was thinking, what's next? But yeah, we got a good Grand Prix, and that's the good thing. And I think we'll just finally touch on testing. The riders are currently testing as we're doing this podcast. Just to talk about Yamaha and Honda, because I assume that they're the two that are going to bring the most because of concessions and everything. They had a very difficult weekend in the Grand Prix. You know, Fabio Quartararo and Alex Rins reporting arm pump because of the heavy M1 Yamaha now as well. What's going on there?
Well, it just sums up the extent of their problems, doesn't it? That one of the best handling bikes on the grid is now one of the hardest to handle. And Rins sort of revealed that, he's had arm pump problems ever since the first race on the Yamaha that he did it in Qatar. So, yeah, clearly they have a lot of work to do on the handling side of things. You know, there's been a lot of attention on the engine, isn't there? The straight line performance and all that kind of stuff. But it's a bit like with Honda. Honda have lost their strength on the front end and braking, and Yamaha have lost their strength in the cornering now. As they sort of try and address the other areas, they've lost what they did have with the bike that was working well. And they'll be looking to get that back. As you say, a lot of parts on track. Obviously, teams are very secretive about what they're testing. But, you know, Yamaha Aero for sure. I think electronic chassis. Question mark over the engine. They don't quite like to be quite so open whether the, you know, they'll be testing an engine. But you've got to believe it's in the pipeline. And also for Honda, it seems like the more Joan Mir is sort of most open about it. He's obviously been on the bike for a year now. And he's kind of like, well, look, you know, we've changed just about everything else. So,
yeah,
you know, he leaves everyone to complete the sentence. If you've changed everything else and it's still not working, what's it going to be? So, yeah, whether they'll have one today, who knows? Obviously, Bradle was there as a wild card this weekend. Cal wasn't there for Yamaha as a wild card, and he's not testing today either. But, yeah, a lot of new parts at Yamaha, a lot at Honda, you've got to believe. Aprilia, obviously, that they were out there with Savadori on a lab bike. Wasn't quite clear exactly what they've got. Not a carbon frame, but maybe some differences. Danny, of course, was on what they called a different bike. KTM also keeping their lips closed as to exactly what was different about that bike. But without doubt, Binder, Miller, maybe Acosta, who knows how many bikes they've got, they'll get to try the Danny bike, if you like, or Daniel, I suppose we should call it.
Yeah, Daniel, yes.
They will
yes.
try the Daniel bike today at the test. So, yeah, for Ducati, you would say their priority is the chatter, but actually they didn't have chatter this weekend. KTM
Correct.
Had chatter this weekend.
Exactly.
So it was a strange one. It seems like more and more factories are sort of starting to think that this rear tyre, the changes that they are getting some vibration. They call it vibration because chatter's got such a negative connotation if you say you've got chatter. But it seems like, coming back to the race result, as you said, top five Ducati riders in the Grand Prix. Gigi said, you know, this is the real performance of the bike without the vibration issue. So it does just show if they can be like this week in, week out, solve that vibration issue, they're back at the top again. You know, maybe it was a bit of a false dawn for the other guys when we were seeing them being beaten because they had the vibration issue. But let's see, is it going to be there at Le Mans? In a way, it's a bit of a shame for Ducati, if you like, that they don't have the vibration problem, because how can they fix it if it's not
there?
That's
not there, exactly.
There we are. So that's the trouble, because for sure that would have been maybe top of their list for this test, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Fix the chatter. And then they don't have chatter all weekend, it seems. So, yeah, let's see what they work on. But, Ducati certainly back to their best this weekend.
Yeah, I want to keep it on the subject. We'll end the podcast with Gigi Dirini. He said after to MotoGP.com that, as you said, Pete, they wanted to work on the issues of the chatter. But, like, if it's not there, what are you going to work on? Rob, I want to focus, I said, especially on Gigi's comments about Marc Marquez. It's very interesting, actually. He got pressed by, I think it was Jack Gorse or Jack Appleyard, one of the two, for Dorna. What is Marc going to test tomorrow? And Frankie Carchetti said that he can't go into specifics on Twitter, but he said Marc will have two bikes to test. Are Ducati starting to already switch their mentality towards Marc, being like, we've seen what you can do already, and they're going to give him bits from maybe the upgraded 2023 that we've seen last year? Remember, Marc is on the base, essentially, that Zarco had from last year. Is he going to get the sort of fork-mounted winglets? Do you see a change of attitude? You can see it with Gigi already.
I think there has been a slight change. I think there's to what degree, we don't know, but there's development that's going towards Marc Marquez that is maybe not going to reach the other riders on the 23 bikes. I think there were already, sounds like, some whispers in the paddock that Gigi and Ducati are pushing for Marc to be in the factory next season, which would be, I mean, exactly what Marc himself wants, would be huge for MotoGP, huge for Ducati. How Jorge Martin is going to feel about that, obviously, is we don't know. And if we're just looking at Jerez and the results, perfect time to deliver for Marc Marquez, and obviously the wrong time for Martin to make a mistake if Gigi is thinking, you know, we would like to put Marc on that bike alongside Bagnaia next season. The fact that they are seemingly pushing a bit more of their support and development towards Marc Marquez and potentially allowing him to test some things that weren't maybe in the pipeline at the beginning of the season is a clear example of how they view Marc Marquez at the minute. They can obviously see his data, and I think they've been very impressed. You saw after qualifying Gigi go into the Gresini box and congratulate Marquez, and then both have a smile and a conversation. So I think the relationship is good as well, and that's being, even with what happened in Portimao, the relationship looks strong. That to me already is sort of a signal that there's potentially something in the works there.
Yeah. Pete, just to finally end it, I think Rob's hit the nail on the head. You can see the way Gigi and Marc kind of have this. I think it was really apparent this weekend. The cameras caught a lot of it, where he would be in you know, shaking the hand and straight away, you know, high-fiving Mark after the race yesterday. He is in factory colours, GG, but he loves seeing his Ducatis up the front. When he sees a 23 versus, you know, the current model and Mark is doing everything, you know, he sees the data that Mark puts out there. He sees everyone else's. You know, we said before the weekend, we'd get a lot of answers maybe about how this market would change. But I seem to think this weekend, especially with Mark Marquez, he wants a factory bike. He made that clear. He said that discussions usually happen around this time of year. They start. And could he stay with Gresini on a 25 in the future? But for me, the Aprilia side, the more I see it now, it's more Ducati based. There's only two options. He gets a 25 on a Gresini. If they stay with Ducati, by the way, because there's some rumours I'm not going to go into in detail about Yamaha going to Gresini. That's for a different podcast. They really want him in the factory team. I get that sense. What do you feel from it?
You know, Ducati, they reward the fast riders. So if you're performing at the front, you get the new parts. KTM, similar philosophy. You know,
yep.
People are already saying Acosta's got the same spec bike as Binder and Miller because he's proving, hey, I'm the guy at the front. If you're going fast on it, which Mark undoubtedly is, you get the new parts. So you know, that's the motivation. We saw it with Bezzecchi last year. And a bit like you were saying, look, let's be honest, this bike that Mark is on, it's not the same spec as Pecco and the other guys finished last season with, is it? As you said. So there's plenty of room to improve that spec. And you know, going forward, we know, look, last year we saw Martin, we saw Pecco fighting for the title. Undoubtedly, clearly, Ducati wanted Pecco to win, didn't they? They said for the sponsors and everything else, you know, we'll treat them equally. But if we have to, you know, we want our guy to win.
Yeah.
Look, if they're seeing something special from Mark, do you give him a factory bike at Gresini and then have to beat him? Or do you put him in, there you go, Jordan, you've answered the question. Or do you put him in your team and he wins for you? And I think the difficulty will come. Let's say we know last year, don't we, that if Jorge Martin had won the championship, he could have gone to the factory team. Now, does that still stand? That will be the interesting thing. We know he's out of contract, but potentially we know that Ducati, they're not going to want Jorge Martin to go to a manufacturer, Aprilia, with a number one plate.
Exactly.
So that's where it gets more complicated, doesn't it? But you know, as things stand now, if they're seeing, and as you said, only GG and the guys at Ducati that can see all the data, but the indications are they're seeing something special from Mark on this year-old bike already after only four races. If they're thinking, yeah, you know, this guy, give him another year, he's going to be doing even more special things on this bike. Maybe they want him in the factory team. Mark has now said, hasn't he, this weekend, it was a factory bike, I think, on Thursday, and then by, I don't know, Saturday or something, I think he told the Spanish media that, well, you know, when people say, well, what about Pramac? And suddenly it was, well, they're a good team, but it's a satellite team. And that's, you can understand that. If he's going to stay in a satellite team, he may as well stay at Gresini and get the factory. Why bother moving and having to learn all the crew again and everything else? So, yeah, I think Mark clearly wants that factory ride. We saw him very careful with Pecco, shall we say, in the races. He's doing exactly the right thing. Gigi's happy with him, as you said, which is a massive thing as well. So, you know, it's all there for him. But the problem is that certain number 89 at Pramac, if he goes and beats them and wins the championship, what do you do then, you know?
Yeah, it's great. So it is. It's a really interesting angle. Not to forget as well, Jorge Martin's still leading the championship, by the way, folks.
Exactly.
And he is still the man to beat. I still think he was brilliant this weekend. And the mistake, yeah, it happened. But it's the first one he's made this year. And two in the one doesn't really happen. And Andrea Bastianini, I forget this as well. Andrea's had a fantastic start to the year. He's been so consistent. He's third in the world championship as well. Do you know what, Ducati? Just make like five red bikes. Just play.
It's a luxury problem, and isn't it?
That'll solve it, wouldn't it? Yeah, exactly. It's a luxury problem. And who else? You think about it. Marc Marquez, he's obviously the biggest name in MotoGP, but they have people that are so used to the Ducati with Martin, Bastianini, and Pecco's probably going, well, who's going to be my teammate? Because I'm going to deal with him no matter what. So I think Pecco and an ideal world would love Enea to stay as teammate because he has a good relationship. You know, they've had that. Martin, yeah, they grew up with each other. They were teammates in lower categories, but I think there's some real tension there between those two. And with Mark, you know, we've seen what's happened already this year. I mean, that'll just be absolute fireworks. And I'd love to see, I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm really excited to see what happens, because we've talked about it in a previous podcast, and Ducati have got themselves in a really nice but chaotic position. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But honestly, guys, that was a great chat. I've enjoyed it. We'll have plenty of reaction on Christ.net from the test that's happening currently. So this is the Monday we're recording it. I'm just trying to see the times. I can't really see anything of note. There's just many people out there. It's just a difficult thing with testing.
Marquez is the only rider under the 137s at the moment.
So there you go. And it's we can't see the pictures. That's the only annoying thing, because you don't know what Mark is testing. We'll get a reaction, obviously, but we'll have everything covered. What a weekend. And let's hope that Le Mans is something similar. And I pray, because it's a great crowd as well. So we're in the European swing. Everything's great. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get them from. Head over to the YouTube channel, like, subscribe, all that business. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.